Now, I have here Father Alessio Parente. I'd almost want to repeat that name, Alessio, because it gets murdered in Ireland, all the different pronunciations it gets. And it's a golden opportunity, indeed, to discover from you, Father, some of your own memories of Padre Pio. I have to be a little bit selective in this because, well, there are so many questions I could ask you, but if I err at all, I want to do so on the side of your own personal experience or your own glimpses, your own memories of Padre Pio, so that those of us listening to this tape when you have gone back to Italy will know a little bit more about the messenger himself, or about the singer, if you like, and then hopefully would be more interested in the message or the song. Might I begin by asking you to just to think for a moment of your very first contact with Padre Pio, the first time you actually met him?
The first time was in 1948 when I was in the seminary, and we had a day out, and we went to San Giovanni Rotondo for Padre Pio's Mass. We attended the Mass, and after Mass, we went in the sacristy, and we were 25 children, and we asked his blessing, and we kissed his hands, which was without gloves, so we really kissed the wound on his hand. And after he blessed us, he gave us a few words. He told us a few words, saying, try to imitate Saint Francis and his virtues, and remember that Saint Francis' life is a life of happiness, joy, but also of some kind of mortification and suffering. But you needn't worry, because you will overcome sufferings and problems, because the religious life is a beautiful religious life, it's beautiful.
Supposing, as a part of that same question, supposing you never met him again, what would be the one memory you have of that first meeting?
Well, the words he said about following some French's footstep stayed in my mind for years, and they are still now. I still remember, Padre Pio, very tall, beautiful in his face, with a smile on his face, telling us children, to follow Saint Francis' footstep. I still will remember that. I don't think it will be ever cancelled from my mind.
Lovely. That's interesting. You talk about the smile on his face and the beautiful expression. Some people consider him as harsh, as against being Christ-like, when we think of being meek and gentle. What was your experience of?
Well, I don't think so, because I've been at Padre Pio's side, and Padre Pio was a lovely man, always joyful, and really he would make you at ease near him. And he was not harsh. There was a reason why sometimes he was harsh, and it was this, because many people used the sacrament of penance as a mean to approach him. They were not sincere. They were not going there to go to confession to him. They were going to kiss his hand or just to be proud that they had approached Padre Pio, they had talked to Padre Pio. And that's the time when Padre Pio would not listen to them, or he would throw out of the confessional box. But also, Father Agostino, his spiritual director, one day wrote him a letter saying, why do you treat people so hard and you are not kind to people? And Padre Pio said, Jesus tells me every time how to treat each one of them. I can obey you, but that's Jesus is telling me what to do.
Beautiful. For people listening to this tape now, including myself indeed, where we can be so busy doing so many things, and some mothers rearing children, etc., we are conscious of a problem for time, for prayer, for example, and from what I know of Padre Pio, his work schedule was really extraordinary. Could you speak to us for a moment about what you saw in him as a man of prayer?
Okay, he will get up really at 2 o'clock every morning, and then will sit down on the chair and get ready for the mass. And all that time he was just reciting the rosary all the time. Then he would say mass, and you know, the mass of Padre Pio was an extraordinary happening because the church was full of people, but at the same time Padre Pio's mass was different from the others. His mass lasted even 4 hours because he would go in ecstasy, and he would be there in ecstasy until the superior would give him permission to go on with the mass. The superior was always in the choir loft, and he would send him a mental obedience to continue the mass. Otherwise, he would be in ecstasy 4 hours. And speaking about the Pio, you know, time, after mass, he would go upstairs for a few minutes, and then he would go to your confession 4 hours. But when he was going through the people, he would listen to people, so he couldn't pray. But between one answer and the other, I could see him still, you know, fingering the rosary. This means that he never lost time. Like when he was in the refectory with other friars, he would eat that fork of spaghetti or greens, whatever he had that day, and then with his rosary in his hands, even though the other friars were addressing to him or talking to him, he was still fingering the rosary. And he never lost time, really. It was a continuous prayer he had during the day.
Beautiful. Now, another question as part of that. All right, the rosary beads, obviously never out of his hand. But you know, in some pictures, and you sometimes see it on the film, where it might be an after-mass prayer, like with the head in the hands.
Yeah.
You were aware of him, of course, praying in other ways besides just...
Well, that's not the time when he was reciting the rosary, but he was making a thanksgiving. And that's the time when you would see him completely absorbed, like he was continuing the mass, like he was, you know, in another world. And we wouldn't disturb him in that moment, you know. He could be half an hour there, kneeling down, or with his hands, with his head in his hands, he would be meditating, or I don't know what he was doing, but I'm sure he would not turn, no matter what was happening around him.
Good. Now, just one further question on that. Maybe this is my own particular interest, but I would hope it would be the interest of many people listening. Today, when, you know, Mass in the vernacular and people are invited to share prayers and to share a prayer with each other, did you ever experience him, like with all the people coming to see him on his own in his cell, was he known to pray with them?
Oh, many times. The angelus, like if the angel would ring, he would just stand up, and whoever was around him, he would pray. And sometimes he was reciting the Holy Office in his room with another friar because, you know, all alone he was getting old and he would prefer to pray with other friars. If there were two friars there, three friars, he would recite the office with the friars rather than be alone.
There's another question, you know, when you're in his presence, and you were so often and over a period of time, I often imagine myself that if I were in the presence of Jesus, I mean physically, visibly present like you are now, I'm wondering how would I feel? Would I feel guilty? Would I feel comfortable? Would I feel loved? Would I feel that he was, as it were, looking through me, that I would, as it were, be naked or exposed in his presence? How did you really feel in his presence?
Well, first of all, I was appointed to be a nurse at his side, you know, so I nursed him during the day and during the night. Whenever he needed me, I was there. But at the same time, I think his personality was giving me this friend, you know, to be always in good shape, I would say. I mean, I would not do anything wrong because I was at Paribas' side. And thank God, I never think I did anything wrong that I could fear being at this side.
St. Paul talks about faith and hope and love, and he says the greatest of these is love. Now, in the final analysis, Padre Pio's life, and even in the eyes of God, as well as ours, of course, that he'd be judged whether he loved or not. And love can be in words, but love must also be in action. How did you experience him as a man with what we would say in Ireland, a big heart? Mm-hmm. A man with great love. What was your experience?
Well, all his day was a continuous act of love, I think. Because, first of all, you know, he would, no matter what was happening around him, he would say Mass for the people. He would, after Mass, meet every one of them, no matter what problem they had, he would listen to them. And I think that's love, because when you listen all day, people telling you all kind of problem and sickness and difficulties in the family, and you bear every one of them and you listen every one of them, I think that's love, because he spends his time for others, not for himself. And also, don't forget that since he was young, you know, he always thought about others. In 1956, he started the hospital, and that's for the sick. There were many kindergartens opened by Padre Pio, and that's for love for children. And he encouraged the superiors, you know, to build up, you know, a big, huge center for the handicapped and for the handicapped children. I think this is love.
Speaking of his love and kind-heartedness and gentleness, I remember one time, I forget exactly where, but I heard you talk about Padre Pio actually apologizing to you. Would you tell us about that, please?
Well, mostly he would do that during the night, because, as you know, Padre Pio was always beaten by the devil, so... Oh, he was afraid at that time that I was assisting him that they would throw him out of the bed, you know, kill him, and I would not be present because I wouldn't hear, you know, he couldn't reach the bell to call me. But one night he called me many times, and then after that he was very uneasy because must have been tortured by the devils. He didn't like to be alone, so after so many times I went in his room, he started to cry and said, "My son, forgive me, because, you know, I can't do without you. I need your presence here."
Continuing on that same level of experience, and this is not just idle curiosity, because this is my whole hope in this cassette, is something like your own experience, for example, by location, something that you actually saw or witnessed that would pin that down to a specific thing.
Yeah, well, I have a beautiful experience about Padre Pio in Bailovision, because I was present when Father Eusebio asked him, "Father, you're going in Bailovision every night, why don't you take me with you?" And Padre Pio said to him, "How will you come?" And the Father Eusebio, you know, pointing his cord, he said, "I will attach myself to your cord." And Padre Pio, you know, smiling and really laughing, he said, "Well, what will happen if the cord will break?" He said, "I will continue to go, but you will go down right in the ocean." That's kind of, you know, answers he would give. And one day I asked him, "Father, how do you go in by location?" And Padre Pio answered, he said, "I know only one thing, that I go wherever God sends me every night. But I don't know if I go there with my body, with my soul, or with both of them." And speaking about bilocation, I remember he was very sick with bronchitis. He couldn't even breathe. And the doctors for months were asking me, "Please, Father Alessio, try to take Padre Pio in the garden so he can breathe some fresh air." Well, for months I repeat what the doctors would tell me. But one night Father Pio couldn't bear me anymore saying these words. So he said to me, "Well, if you want breathe fresh air, come with me tonight. Well, at night I undressed him, I helped him to go to bed. When everything was in order, I went in my room. 10 minutes later, Padre Pio called. And he said, I am cold. Now, think that Padre Pio, winter time or summertime, no air conditioning, no central heating, Padre Pio had only on himself a sheet. So I put a blanket over him and went back to my room. 5 minutes later, he called again, I'm cold. I put another blanket on him. To make the story short, I went 5 times in my room, I put 5 blankets on him. And then I went to the kitchen, I got 3 hot water bottles and I put around him, his body, to warm him up. No avail. Then I measured the fever, there was no fever. So I couldn't understand what was going on. I said, Father, I can't help you anymore. I'm going to phone the doctor. It's night time, but he'll come. And he said, no, don't call the doctor. Don't call the doctor. I'm just cold. I'm not sick. So that's the time when it struck me what he said in the evening. If you want breathe fresh air, come with me tonight. So I asked Father Crucian in Rome, who knows all about supernatural phenomenon, you know, by location. He's an expert in this. And he said, Father Alessio, Father Pio could have been on a high mountain, hearing a confession of a penitent, or he went on a high mountain to help some of his spiritual children. He felt the cold, but he had no fever, he was not sick. That's when I realized that night, he said, you know, come with me in by location.
Feeling my own privilege here now, representing people listening to this cassette at the moment, I'm just going to continue with these specific experiences because to me they're priceless, really. Suffering and Padre Pio, the kind of, the two words go together, but some specific experience where you actually saw or evidenced that, yes, this man is really suffering.
Yeah. Okay, Padre Pio usually would suffer from the wounds he had on his hands, on his side and on the feet. Especially walking on his feet was a torture for him. He was dragging himself all the time. And Padre Pio also was not always suffering, because many times I opened the door and I found him in ecstasy. He was beautiful that I cannot describe. His face was rosy, his eyes were like transformed completely. But I remember one afternoon, it was 2:30, I went in his room, I said, Father, it's time to go to your confession. So I found him, you know, like he was really in another world. Beautiful face, beautiful eyes, shining eyes, like he was looking at something supernatural. I helped him to get up of the chair, and I took him outside of the room. You know, I was taking him by the arm outside. When he reached outside, I looked in his face, and he looked like Jesus on the cross. Completely emaciated, he bent down like he was carrying a cross. And I said, Father, you are sick. No, I'm not sick. I must go to your confession. But realizing really he couldn't even walk, I called Father Onorato, another priest, and he came and helped me. And we were trying to get him back in his room, and he was pleading us and saying, no, take me down to your confession. I must go to your confession. I must go to your confession. So we nearly carried him down. We helped him to sit on the chair, but as we thought he was very sick, we didn't let anyone go to confession to him. We didn't open the door of the sacristy. Even though we didn't open the door of the sacristy and no one was kneeling there, he started to say, how long since your last confession? And then a silence for 3-4 minutes. Then he said, you'll say 5 Our Father to St. Michael. And he gave absolution. After he gave absolution, he got up, he became beautiful again, radiant again, and without our help, he climbed the steps of the sacristy up to the second floor with no help. Now, I couldn't explain what happened. And Father Krushan again explained to me, he said, this is a case of Padre Pio in bilocation. He had to go to hear confession, you know, to appear that he was going to hear confession. But he was not there. He was in bilocation, absolving a person in danger or dying, and that's the case. I would say, when he, to save that soul, he accepted, he offered to God to suffer. And that's why I saw him like Jesus on the cross, bent down like he was carrying a cross. He couldn't even breathe.
I've used the word beautiful twice already. I use it yet again.
Oh.
You have written or compiled a book recently on Padre Pio and the Angel, Send Your Guardian Angel. And I know that this is a favorite topic of yours, and it's obviously because you've been impressed by it and it has been real for you. So I would ask you now just to, off maybe not off the top of your head, but from your heart, just to share some of your own personal experiences in this whole area of Padre Pio and the angels.
And when I was at his side, I knew already about the guardian angel Padre Pio, because, you know, in books and from the other friars, I knew that Padre Pio, since he was a child, he started to see the guardian angel. But when I was at his side, I experienced myself these things, because I was at his side during the night and during the day. And to tell you the truth, I never got a good night's sleep. The only time, and people would be amazed for this, you know, was during his Mass, and during the time he was here in confession. I would accompany him to the altar, take the gloves from his hands, and run straight in my room and go right to sleep. But I should have been down at the end of the Mass to pick him up from the altar, give him back the gloves, and take him back to the sacristy, to his room. But many times, my alarm clock didn't wake me up, or even if it rang, I didn't hear it. So I was not on time. But every time that this happened, I had a knock at the door. I would jump out of the bed. There was no one in the long corridor there. Then I would realize that I was late. I would run downstairs, and I found Padre Pio always giving the last blessing. That's the time when he will put on the gloves and return to the sacristy. The same thing will be at the confessional box. I would help him to sit down in the confessional box, and then I knew he would be there around 3 hours. What better than 3 hours sleep for me? I would run through the crowd, straight in my room, set the alarm clock, and go right to sleep. But many times, as usual, I didn't wake up. And I always heard the voice, Alessio, Alessio, go down. I would, you know, jump out of the bed, run downstairs to the confessional box, and there was Padre Pio in the confessional box waiting on me. And he would not get up alone, because he knew that if he would cross the crowd alone, he would go upstairs without habit, because Italian women had scissors in their bags and they would cut pieces of his habit. So I had to be at his side. But this story is this about the guardian angels, that during the day I was feeling guilty. I approached Padre Pio and said, Father, I'm sorry I was not on time to pick you up from the altar and from the confessional box. And he pointed the finger to me and he said, do you think, my son, that I will continue to send you my guardian angel to wake you up every morning? He said, you better go and buy a new alarm clock. And that's one of the stories about Padre Pio and the guardian angel. And then another time, it happened the same. I was going through the crowd with Padre Pio, and every day I would hear, Father, I cannot come again. What will I do? When I need your prayers, your protection, your assistance. And Padre Pio used to say to them, if you cannot come, send me your guardian angel. He'll take a message from you to me, and I will pray for you, and I will assist you as much as I can. I could hear these words every day from Paribio's lips. One day I was sitting near Paribio. It was half past 2 in the afternoon when all the friars had their siesta, so there was no one there. So I thought, well, this is a good time to ask Paribio some questions. I opened one of the many letters I would get from people, and I condensated, you know, in a few words. I said to Paribio, Father, this lady wants to know this. And Paribio said to me, come on, my son, let me alone. Didn't you see I have been very busy? And I was stuck, you know. I said, you're not busy. You're just fingering the rosary. That's not a hard job. That's, I thought, you know, in my mind, that's what was going on. But then Paribio misunderstood what I was thinking, because he said to me, didn't you see all these guardian angels going back and forwards from all my spiritual children, bring messages from them? Well, I understood what he meant. I said, Father, I didn't see any angels, but I believe you, because you tell people every day that they can send you their guardian angel with a message from them.
It seems rather blasphemous almost to move from guardian angels to devils, but you referred to this earlier, and I think in today's world, quite honestly, that we should listen also to what he had to say to us.
Well, I don't want to scare people, but one day I said to Father Pio, Father, could you tell me how many devils are in the world? And Father Pio said, there are more devils in the world than all the human beings since creation. Well, that's a lot. But at the same time, we have more guardians, more angels around us. We need to be afraid. To tell you something about the devils and Padre Pio. As I told you before, he was beaten, thrown out of the bed. But when I was assisting him last 3 years of his life, he was really afraid of them. And one night, I helped him to go to bed, and after a while, he rang me. I went in his room, I approached his bed, and I said, Father, do you need anything? He looked at me and smiled and didn't say anything. So I went back to my room. 5 minutes later, he called again. I went in his room, approached his bed. I made the same question, Father, do you need anything? And he looked at me, smiled, and didn't say anything. To make the story short, I went many times in his room, and he never gave me an answer. So, finally, I didn't get upset, because that was my duty. But I got a little bit, you know. I said, Father, you're calling me here all the time, and when I come here, you don't say anything, you don't want anything. Let me sleep half an hour, he said. Otherwise, you will help me tomorrow to go around, not me, you. And he just, with his tears in his eyes, he said, my son, please don't leave me. Sit down on that chair and stay with me, because the devils don't leave me 1 minute alone.
We hope and pray and expect that Padre Pio will be raised to the altar of the church, or in plain ordinary English, that he will be canonized. Why do you think that he will or should be canonized?
Well, he will be canonized because, you know, from all the manifestation of miracles and graces, above all, for the life he lived. I mean, he is a man of prayer and suffering. During my 6 years, I have not seen Paribio doing anything else than pray and suffer. That's why he should be, you know, canonized for his good and holy life. But also because he has helped so many people. I mean, 14 hours in the confessional box, helping people, giving counsels, and solving their problem and their questions. There are people that really like him to see on the altar. He deserves that, they say. He deserves, because he helped me. He interceded for grace for my family, for my mother, for my child, for my brother, and so on. That's, I think, you know, it's the reason why he should be canonized, and I think he will be canonized, above all, for his great life of holiness and suffering.
You've been singularly blessed insofar as, in a way, you have bridged a gap, or because you were with Padre Pio, you saw the groups coming, you saw how their lives were affected as they left to go home. Then you have seen the growth and the thousands that still come there.
Yeah.
Do you find that the people leaving San Giovanni today would kind of leave with the same effect, with the same challenge in their lives, with the same word ringing in their ears that they did while he was alive?
I think it's the same. Because when he was alive, he was present, and people didn't like to leave the place, you know, because they would just be happy to see him on the altar, to see him hearing confession, or even to have a second, you know, with him. But now that he's not there, I feel that the movement of people coming there to see what? A stone. They come there and they see a marble stone, that's all what they see. But when they approach me and they say, Father, I wish I could stay another 2 days, another week. It's so beautiful to kneel down at that tomb. There's such a peace and such a tranquility in my heart, in my soul, that I will not, never leave. So people still see and feel Padre Pio's presence there. They are very much in favor of being there at that tomb and not going away, no matter what they have to do. And I remember, I look after the English groups when they come. I help them as much as I can. And usually, when they leave from, you know, the square of the friary. And usually I go them, bless them, and say goodbye. But you should see anxious and tears coming down when I say goodbye to them, because they won't stay longer there. They like to stay in that place, which is really a marvelous place of a prayer and, you know, of this, how can I say, serenity and tranquility.
You're here in Ireland, as you are at the moment, obviously. Could I ask you simply, what are you doing in Ireland?
Well, I knew Padre Pio, I know Padre Pio well. I'm trying to spread these messages around Ireland, around America, wherever I'm going, because I've been in many nations. And going around, I don't do anything than just say Mass and spread Padre Pio's spirituality, which is, you know, to tell people about the great love for Jesus in the Blessed Sacrament, the great love for Our Lady, you know, the devotion that we should have to the angels, to holy souls, which I have never spoken before. But I had so many experiences about Padre Pio, insisting and praying for holy souls. This is my message. I mean, I tell people about these things that Padre Pio had in great consideration.
Might I just come in with a question and just divert for a moment about Ireland, because I want to follow up on that in a moment. But something about the holy souls, for example, I could have included that earlier in talking about angels and devils and bilocation and suffering, but it's never late. Maybe at this stage you would tell us something.
But I remember, I heard from Padre Pio's lips these words. There are more souls from purgatory climbing this mountain to attend my Mass than people. Now, we all know that millions of people came up there in 52 years that Padre Pio was in San Giovanni Rotondo. Now, still he says there are more souls from purgatory climbing this mountain to attend my Mass and ask my prayers. This means that God gave holy souls the privilege of being a Padre Pio's Mass to be free from the suffering of purgatory. And there are so many apparitions of dead people to Padre Pio, which are recorded. And Padre Pio, in one of the letters, I think, to his spiritual directory, said, there are so many dead people appearing to me, requesting a Mass for their soul, that I don't get scared anymore. One day he was in the how to say fireplace,
yes.
And he was there, and he saw four friars with the head down, and he asked them, "Who are you?" And they didn't answer. So he went to the superior. He said, "There are four friars at the fireplace there. I asked them who they were, and they didn't give me an answer." And the superior said, "No one came here today. If there was a friar from another friary, I should know." And Padre Pio said, "Yes, there are four friars down there, and they all look they are suffering, but they were looking for prayers. They were looking that Padre Pio would say Mass for them so they could go to heaven." And I remember one story particularly, that of the novice on the altar. Padre Pio usually would pray in the choir loft up to 1 o'clock. So one night he had someone on the altar cleaning the altar and preparing the flowers. Well, he thought it was the brothers preparing the altar for the morning. The second night, at the same time, he had again someone on the altar cleaning the altar, preparing the flowers. He had the same thought, the brother preparing for the morning. But when the third night came and he had someone again on the altar cleaning the altar, he got curious. He looked down from the balcony and he saw a small novice cleaning the altar. And he said to him, "Who are you and what are you doing there?" And the novice answered, "I am here since 6 years. I was appointed to clean the altar of the Blessed Sacrament and prepare the flowers, but I never did my job well, or I didn't do it at all. So I am still doing my purgatory here in sufferings and pains. But God has given me a special privilege. If you say Mass for me tomorrow, I will go straight to heaven." And Padre Pio said Mass that morning for that novice. He never appeared again.
I am glad I asked you that question, even though I diverted from my original one about what you're doing in Ireland, and thank you for answering that one. If I might just come back to a follow-up to that question and say, as you travel around Ireland, for example, and I'm sure it's the same in England and in the States and different places, what are you discovering? What are you finding happening among the people?
I discovered that people want to see about Padre Pio, about his spirituality, the message that he has to give to them nowadays. Because Padre Pio is a saint of our days, not of a century ago. And in going around, you can see they trust in Padre Pio intercession. Yes, Padre Pio said, "I can do much more when I will be in heaven." I think they think about that words of Padre Pio. And they trust in him, and they are really happy to hear about Padre Pio when I go around Ireland.
I feel I could go on and on and on, but there's one other question, maybe just by way of pulling this together, because there's no way we can put everything on a cassette that I would like to ask you, or put everything on a cassette that you would like to speak about. But just a word to the listener of this cassette, how we might best promote what the Lord is doing through this servant of his, Padre Pio.
Apart from books, you know, pictures and other things that usually we do for promotion, but I think the best thing to do is that people will get praying at the Padre Pio prayer group meetings. Now they are all over the world, and I see them increasing all the time, even in Ireland. But if in every church was a Padre Pio prayer group, I would suggest to people that's the way to promote Padre Pio. Because Padre Pio loved seeing people praying together for the church particularly, for the intention of the Holy Father. This is the purpose of the prayer group, but that's the best to spread Padre Pio and accept Padre Pio's message in Ireland.
A cassette can seem to be very general, you know, and maybe not personal, but I think myself it is a personal thing. There is somebody listening to this at this moment in time. And just finally, as you go back from here to the tomb of Padre Pio, to pray for the listener and to know and pray that this cassette will be a source of blessing to them. Would you have one last personal word to the listener?
I can assure you, when I go back, for those that will listen to this tape, I put it in danger because I don't know them, but I will kneel down at that tomb and tell Padre Pio and say to him, look, there are people listening to you, to your message now. Help them. Encourage them in their life and try to do your best for them because they love you.
Might I conclude by saying that on behalf of the listener now, thanking you and thanking you for that promise. And I know in our own way we can repay you somewhat by including you and the work that you are responsible for and the work that San Giovanni promotes, including that in our prayers. And on behalf of the listener, I'd like to say thank you and God bless you.
Thank you.